Davis. Actually, almost just arrived. Well, so as Alberto said, I'm going to talk about some applications to recent experiments on heavy ion collisions, or at least some ideas of string theory that might be applicable to some recent experiments on heavy ion collisions. And this is based on a couple of works. The first one is a work I did last year with Nestor Armesto and Javier Mas from Santiago de Compostela. And the second the second work is a more recent one with Gaetano Bertoldi from Swansea, Francesco Bigazzi from Brussels, and Aldo Cotrone from Barcelona. There is a five here. Okay, the content of the talk, this talk will have a quite long introductory part that I think that I hope that everybody will appreciate, because I think that the best I can do is to give you a flavor of the kind of things that the kind of problems we are trying to answer. So these first three parts of the talk will be like a half of the talk, more or less, I hope, explaining what is the physics that we are trying to explain, or to which we are trying to approach. And then I will come to my work, and first I will discuss the concentration of the jet quenching parameter that I will explain before what this is. This was the first part, the first paper a little before. And then most of the papers on string theory dealing with the quark gluon plasma, even if the same word quark gluon plasma, of course, means that you have to have quarks into the picture, all the papers don't, up to now, have no quarks, basically, have no matter in the fundamental representation. So the last part of the talk, which is the content of the second paper, is to try to deal with a couple of examples in which we have theories with flavors, supersymmetric theories with flavors, in which we can compute the properties of the would-be quark gluon plasma. And I will tell you about two. Of course, this is a very difficult problem. I will try to explain why. So we are able to deal with two cases that, in a sense, are weak. I mean, they are. We deal with them because we are able to deal with them, and we are not able to deal with, for example, n equals 1 super QCD itself. And I will explain the weaknesses, and I will explain why, even if we know that these weaknesses are there, we still want to compute and see what we get. So the two cases are the non-critical strings, and the second case is wrapped fibrin scenarios. I will explain everything, because probably not everybody here works in string theory, so I'd like to be clear. And then finally, I will discuss the results and I conclude. So the quark gluon plasma is a longly expected state of matter that since the beginning of the QCD era, people knew or expected that when subjected to sufficiently high temperature or pressure, the quarks and gluons would be a transition to a phase in which quarks and gluons will be free to move within a sort of drop. That at the beginning, the expectation was that this would be some sort of gas, a plasma that resembles a gas. Basically, the idea is that at sufficiently high temperatures, quarks and gluons have a lot of energy at their disposal, so asymptotic freedom would make them to be basically free. So this is something that the temperature is quite high, as you see, and in principle, there are a few places in the universe in which we have this temperature. Basically, the universe, just at the very few microseconds, had this temperature. So this state should have existed at the in the first 20 to 30 microseconds of the universe. But recently, in the laboratory, it was possible to create these conditions. I will give some flavor about this. So this is a rough picture of the phase diagram of QCD. I have to tell you that most of this picture is conjectural, so there are a few hints about different parts of this picture, but it is not that the experiments are, only a few corners of this picture were explored by experiments. Indeed, the experiment to which I will refer is this relativistic heavy ion collider in Brookhaven that is exploring this part of the diagram, and LHC should explore higher temperatures. And then there is an experiment that is still, is still not working, that we'll explore. In principle, we'll go to higher variant densities. So,
What is that experiment? I guess I haven't heard of the FAIR experiment.
Well, the FAIR is the Facility for Antiproton and Ion Research.
Oh.
It's, I think it's in Germany.
I see.
I am a theoretician, so please be patient with me.
Well, I've just never heard of it. That's all. Okay.
If I miss some error bars or some of these comments, please be patient with my experience in that. Okay. What happens in at the relativistic heavy ion collider is that, well, there are several experiments, but the most important for us is the one in which two ions of gold, or two beams of ions of gold, are collided with a huge energy. The center of mass energy per nucleon is 200 GeV. So, of course, the after a few fermis, a lot of particles emerge in different directions, but the data seems to suggest that that something like this happens in the first 10^-22 seconds. Actually, all the physics that I will explain happens between the 1 Fermi and 10 Fermi, more or less. 1 Fermi is 3 × 10^-24 seconds. So the idea is that these are the two ions that are colliding. Given that they are traveling at the speed of light, they are Lorentz contracted, so they are like two disks. At time T0, they collide, and then at 1 Fermi, approximately, the collision thermalizes, and up to 10 Fermis, something happens, that is this state that is supposed to be the quark gluon plasma, and then after 10 Fermi, the system freezes out and hadronizes. Okay. And these are all the particles emerging to the The first hint that there is something strange in the experiment is that people try to compute using perturbative QCD and trying to compute the thermalization time from parton-parton collisions, and all the computations give a thermalization time of around 3 Fermi. While in order to feed the data, you seem to need. Of course, there is debate in several points that I am saying. I think what most of the people think that happens, but there are some people that claim that there are some other mechanisms that are important and have not been taken correctly into account in these computations. But basically, data seems to suggest that the thermalization happens much faster, in a time that is around 1 Fermi or even a little bit less. There are further data that can be taken from, for example, from lattice. You can see that if you compute the energy and the pressure of this state of matter, you get something that looks like a conformal system. And furthermore, another data that we can obtain from the it is remarkable for me at least. That they can compute with a great precision the temperature at freeze out. This is just taking into account the relative abundances of the detected particles at the detectors. So, well, out of this graph, well, here you have the date and the original papers, you can see that the freeze out temperature is about 176 MeV, which is a little bit above the critical temperature computed in lattice. Well, I will discuss two main features of the experiment.
Are we supposed to relate that somehow to the tau zero, or those are two completely separate things?
The
1 Fermi time.
And the temperature, you mean?
Yeah, is there any relation between those?
I think they are unrelated. It's not related.
Okay.
So this is the temperature at 10 Fermi. Before that, before 10 Fermi, of course, the temperature is higher, and there
right.
is some this. Let me call this drop.
Okay.
Cools and expands, and this is the final temperature when the system hadronizes.
Okay. So that on that previous plot, you just bring up that previous time scale. So
in which one? The previous.
Yeah. Piece. Right. So at the 10^-22 second, that's more or less when you reach this.
Yeah.
This 176 MeV. Okay.
So the two main features of this this experiment that I would like to discuss, there are of course more, and I will list some of them, but I will discuss only these two that are very qualitative, and I think that they are telling us with a great probability that something unexpected is happening, are the elliptic flow and the jet quench. So let me tell you what the elliptic flow is, and I will tell you this with a nice film. So this is a film taken from the RIC website. These are the two ions colliding. So you will see that given, just because of the geometry of the system, the region of collision is asymmetric, has the shape of an almond, or this is this red region appearing here. When the two ions leave the region of collision, you have all the temperature concentrated in this region, which is asymmetric. So the particles emitted from that from the collision, of course, have the same asymmetry with respect to the reaction plane. So if this drop, let's call it drop, is a sort of gas, one would expect that the this asymmetry is more or less thermalized and is not really observable in the final data. But the But what the experiment shows is the following. If this is the number of particles emitted or detected per angle, phi, where phi is the angle with respect to the reaction plane, well, this would be a completely symmetric emission. And you have, of course, here in principle a series of a Fourier series. This is the first term. And this coefficient here is called the elliptic flow. The elliptic flow depends, in principle, on everything, on the impact parameter, on the atomic number, and also on the transverse momentum. And this is one of the several plots that you can find in the papers of the Rick's experiment. You see that, okay, if you plot for different particles the value of B2 with respect to Pt, you get a function that is it's not mono, it changes the, well, I mean, from the data you can see that the this function changes the curvature at some point here, around 2 GeV. Actually, let me give you a simplified picture. I mean, if you take from this graph and many other graphs in the experimental literature, you take like the simplified version of this graph, you will see that if you assume that this drop is a perfect liquid, that is a liquid with zero shear viscosity, you would get a function like this that fits the data quite well up to this PT of 1.6 GeV. This fact of taking into account the system as a perfect fluid is based on a long idea, on an idea proposed by Bjorken 25 years ago. Now, if you try to realize what is the origin of this change in the concavity of the curve, you can think that maybe this is due to the fact that maybe you have a shear viscosity, a non-vanishing shear viscosity. Well, to work out hydrodynamics with non-vanishing shear viscosity is an open problem. There is no solution for this problem yet in the literature. But you can try to see what would be the if you take an infinitesimal shear viscosity, you can see what would be the tendency of the curve. So people did this, and you can see that if you start to increase eta, well, basically the curve will be the same up to this point, and then it will start to flatten as the data shows that it happens. So if you can try to fit what would be the value of eta for this to happen. Eta is the shear viscosity. And you can see that fitting the data, roughly, eta over the entropy density is 0.15 in natural units. There is a lot of discussion about this value. If it's, I mean, there's people that is against this computation because there's people that says that the way the non-vanishing eta is introduced into the hydrodynamics equations is not completely consistent. So actually this number has no error bar. It's hard to estimate an error bar. And actually it's also hard to estimate an upper bound for this. But what people I think agree is that the data seems to tell us that this system behaves like an almost perfect fluid, a fluid with a very small shear viscosity.
Can you define shear viscosity? I mean, viscosity, I know, but what do you mean by shear viscosity?
The shear viscosity is the viscosity exerted by two layers of liquid that moves relative on each other.
Okay.
Okay. Let me go to the second point. The second point is the jet quench. In these collisions are reminiscent of the deep inelastic scattering collisions of several decades ago, except for the fact that now you have ions colliding with several nucleons. So one might ask himself or herself, what would be the value of R, where R is the ratio of the number of jets that you get in these collisions, scaled by the number of participating nucleons. I mean, you know, there is a lot of data about the PP collisions. So what you can say, okay, well, I have ions with atomic number A, so I would expect to have, if I compute the number of jets and I divide it by the atomic number, I should get the same numbers that I get for the PP collisions. And this is not the case, and it is not the case in a very interesting manner. If you see, if you do collisions between gold and deuteronium, you will get data that is compatible with one. Data is compatible with the idea that I have just posed, that the number of jets just scale with the number of of nucleons that intervene into the collision. However, if you take the data of the gold-gold collision, you see that there is a strong suppression of the jets. The number of jets that are seen is like about 20% to 25% of the expected jets. Furthermore, if you take the direction 0 degree as the direction of one of the jets, you would expect to see the other jet in the opposite direction. This is what happens in the PP collision. So this is what happens, for example, the PP is the black line. If you, again, do the gold deuteron collision, you also get something which is, these are the red points. You get also something that has a peak in the opposite direction. But for the gold-gold collision, you see that there is no peak in the 180 degrees. And indeed, you can see that there are peaks that are displaced, like for 60 degrees from the back-to-back collision. So this is very strange. And this is the picture that we have of what is happening is the following. And then I will show you a picture from the Rick experiment. If you see this is the two partons emerging in different directions in vacuum, two jets are formed. And here the idea is that if you have a drop of something, of some state in which a parton moving along this state, or through this state, lose too much energy, eventually this parton almost all the events, just by probability, will take place near the surface of the drop, because the surface is, most of the drop is surface. So one of the partons will leave the region without interaction with the drop, while the other one will have to go all across the drop and might lose all the energy while traversing the drop, and just a few particles will emerge on the other side, but not a jet. So in order for this to happen, taking into account the scales, the thermalization scale and the freeze-out scale, this parton has to lose several GeV per Fermi, which is an amazing rate of loss of energy loss. To give you an idea, for the cold nuclear matter, the rate is few MeV per centimeter.
So this suggests that the rate of PT jets should scale like the surface area then?
Sorry?
The rate of PT, high PT jets should scale as A squared, as A to the 2/3, that is, as the surface area? Because you said you only get the jet out if it is at the surface.
Well, what I say is that you will have events in which you will have thousands of events. So some of them will happen in the interior of the drop, and of course they will come out. Maybe no jet will come out. Some of them will happen in the surface, but maybe one of the jets will go tangentially. I mean, there will be. This event is very plausible among all possible parton-parton creation. Let's say this event is very classical. So this might be responsible for the suppression. I don't think that there is something like something like a graphic in which somebody can show that this is proportional to the area.
Well, just the picture of everything, that every time you have a high PT jet, it has to be a surface type event, right?
Yes.
Sort of suggests that the rate should go like the area of the surface or something like that, or you know, maybe the geometry is a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. No, that I understand your point. I don't know the sharp answer to that. Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting point. I don't know the sharp answer. I don't know if it's possible to because, well, you have also to convolute with the probability of parking.
Right, right. I mean, you have to do the job properly.
So simple,
yeah, right.
But I don't know if anybody has thought about that possibility. Well, this R number that I showed in the previous slide is not what is, of course, a macroscopic quantity, and this has to be related to some microscopic quantity that comes from the theory of from a model. So, and this quantity is a quantity to which I will refer in the next. Third of the top, which is called Q-hat. Q-hat is the so-called jet quenching parameter, and it measures the average squared transfer momentum transfers to the hard pattern per mean free path. So if you, I will explain a little bit about this Q-hat. If you extrapolate from the graphic for this quantity R to the values of Q-hat, what you will get is a value of this a value with a huge error bar, as you see, but the experiment seems to suggest that Q hat is between 5 and 15 GB squared over Fermi. Okay, as I was saying, there are further interesting features in these experiments that I will not discuss, but a very interesting point, and the point that will be the basis of my talk, is the following. If you assume that the quark monoplasma is weakly interacting, which was the expectation from the 70s in QCD. So you take you compute this within perturbative QCD, you will get, for the shear viscosity ratio by the entropy density, you will get this. This is the value that you will get in perturbative QCD, and you see that for small lambda is a tough coupling. This goes to infinity. But in any case, if you take this for whatever value of lambda you want to take it, this is much greater than 1. And for Q hat, if you compute this also from perturbative QCD, you get values around 1 GeV squared over Fermi. Remember that we have seen earlier that data seems to suggest that S over S is 0.15 and Q hat is in this range of values. So there is a major or a significant at least mismatch between these two data. So the most easy hypothesis here, the most simple or most natural, I would say, hypothesis is to say that maybe what is happening is that the gluon plasma is not weakly interacting but strongly interacting.
So shouldn't they stop calling it a plasma then?
it's a plasma, it's a sort of liquid plasma.
Yeah. So just a liquid then, strongly interacting liquid.
Yeah, but it has not all the features of a liquid. I mean, it resembles a liquid in the sense that it is strongly interacting, but I don't know. On the other hand, it's a particular kind of liquid with a very small shear viscosity, much smaller than any liquid we know. So
but that makes it an ideal liquid. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just a name. It doesn't matter.
Just okay, so if this is a strongly coupled quark gluon plasma, well, we run into problems to describe it because we have not many tools to deal with strongly interacting gauge theories. So one of the canonical tools is lattice, but lattice is very good for static phenomena. But for real-time dynamics, up to now at least, lattice is not very useful. I mean, the kind of phenomenon we have been dealing with have to do with a particle moving in a plasma and a plasma that is also evolving. So this is very hard for lattice QCD. Up to now, it's impossible to extract something from lattice QCD. Besides, another path
that should be improved is hydrodynamics. I mean, to try to really solve hydrodynamics with beta different from zero, but this is also a very hard problem. So maybe this is a nice place. It seems to be a nice place to use some ideas coming from string theory. That basically is the ADS CFT conjecture.
See, I mean, the smallness of eta though suggests that the pure eta equals zero hydrodynamics wouldn't be too bad an approximation. Is that not true then?
Well, but this the pure hydrodynamics, it was Bjorken 25 years ago already mm-hmm. did many things with pure hydrodynamics. I think that you can do that, but with that you will not explain neither the jet quenching nor the
I see, flow. So that was my question. So you require the shear viscosity to get the quenching?
Yeah, you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I cannot explain ADS-CFT in this talk, but I will remind you a little bit. I'm sure that you have heard talks about ADS-CFT before. So the original ADS-CFT conjecture deals with a gauge theory with a lot of supersymmetries, n equals 4 supersymmetry theory, that has not much to do with QCD. Indeed, QCD displays confinement, it has stable particles, you have scattering between particles, while this is a conformal theory that has no particles, no S-matrix, so it's a very different theory to QCD. However, this is true for T equals zero, for the temperature equals zero. If you turn on the temperature, you see that the features of QCD at finite temperature and the features of N equals 4 at finite temperature are almost the same. The main difference, I would say, is the fact that N equals 4 has no fundamental degrees of freedom, while QCD has, of course, quarks that are fundamental matter. So this is an important difference, but many of the features that you can read in this list are more or less the same.
What
does
that mean?
Sorry?
What do you mean when you say that? It has no fundamental degrees of freedom?
The N equals 4. N equals 4, in principle, you can. There are ways to include fundamental degrees of freedom.
Oh, you mean in the fundamental representation?
In the fundamental representation, yeah. Degrees of freedom in the fundamental representation.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Okay, so these two theories look, they are very similar, so one can at least one can have the idea to compute things in A equals 4 at finite temperature and to try to extrapolate from here to here and to see what happens. So this was a nice path to explore. There are some, ADS-CFT would be an excellent tool, except for the fact that, N equals 4 is not QCD. ADS-CFT really deals with the large and limit, which is not, in principle, the number of colors we observe in nature. And also, it's the computations in the gravity dual are really valid in the lambda going to infinity limit. This is the tough coupling, which is also not the value of the coupling that one would expect to have in the quark-gluon plasma. I will come to this point later again. It is very hard to introduce dynamical quarks in ADS-CFT, so typically the most that people can do is to work in the quenching approximations for large n limit in which the number of flavors is very small, and this is of course not the case of QCD. So there are a lot of things that are not, this is not completely perfect, but this seems to be a nice toy model at least to start with.
Good question. In the previous slide, the things that you said about QCD were true above the critical temperature.
Above the critical.
Now, what about on the right, if there were a critical temperature,
what
would set the scale?
No. Here, the background that people use for these computations of n equals 4 at finite temperature is also above the critical temperature. So
right.
here
so
here is
what in the theory like that, what sets the scale?
In the original Maldacena case, you have not such scale. You have only, you introduce the temperature, you have not the scale to compare with. You introduce the you can have a scale and you can have a phase transition, but in ADS-CFT, but not in the original background of Maldacena. You can have such a scale if you put, typically when people study these phase transitions, people use the so-called Witten background. It is a D4 brain so you have two circles. You have a D4 wrapped in a circle, this gives you a four-dimensional theory, and you also have a circle that is the thermal circle.
What?
So, the thermal circle.
Yeah.
So you have these two radius, that, and this is the ratio of scales. Let's say there is a phase transition when the two circles have the same radius.
Okay.
But this is not the case in the original black three brain solution. Okay, so I was talking about the weaknesses, let's say, of this approach. But the good points is that we know how to introduce finite temperature into ADCFT. Basically, you have to put a black hole into the given background of your interest, and then you relate the temperature and the entropy of the black hole to the temperature and the entropy of the gauge theory. And this is an ad hoc observation that it might happen that there are some universal features that maybe you compute something for N=4, you compute this for other theories with less supersymmetry, and maybe you realize that there is something universal, so this probably applies to PCB. Okay, let me very shortly tell you something very brief about the extension of ADCFT to finite temperature. So as I said, what you have to consider, this is the case of the original D3 brain, the case of Maldacena. You have to consider a black 3 brain, so you have to put a black hole factor in front of DT and DR. This is the solution of the equations of motion. And in this solution, you can compute the Hawking temperature, and you have to identify it with the temperature of the gauge theory. And you can compute the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, and you relate it to the gauge theory entropy. It was already observed that when this was done several years ago that the black hole entropy is not really the entropy computing perturbative super young males, but it's a three quarters of this entropy. But this is not a problem because of the fact that the ADCFT is a weak strong duality. What you are computing here in the gravity system is the strong coupling entropy of the system. So what this result seems to be telling you is that the entropy of the system is a function of the coupling times, for example, the perturbative super young male's entropy, such that when the coupling is zero, you get one here, and when the coupling is infinity, you get three quarters. And this would be the origin of these three quarters. Indeed, people computed the corrections on 1/λ to this result, and it seems to suggest that there is a smooth interpolation between these two values by the function f. I will come back to a point similar to this in the other quantities that I will talk about in this talk. So let's come to the shear viscosity again. This is all work done in like 3 years ago by other people, but I am reviewing it. You have a formula in gauge theory to compute the shear viscosity that comes from Kubo. It's the Kubo formula that relates the shear viscosity with a given limit of a correlator between two components of the stress and energy tensor. These kind of objects are the natural objects to compute in ADCFT, so it is not a surprise that you can compute this within ADCFT. People did this, and I avoid all the details because I cannot explain them here. And what you get if you do this in the black three brain solution is that you get that eta over s is 1/4π in natural units. So this is a very small number, a little bit smaller than the value that the data suggested in my previous transparency, but it's more in the order of magnitude, let's say. While, as I mentioned before, the perturbative computation will give you something which is blows up when lambda goes to zero. So it was a surprise when people computed this that, this value is really compatible with what is observed. At the beginning, it could be an accident or it could be telling something deeper. If you compute corrections in 1/λ, so this value should be valid for lambda going to infinity. If you compute corrections in 1/λ, you see that the corrections seem to, well, at least the first correction, seems to increase the value of eta. So it goes in the right direction for a smooth interpolation with the perturbative result. Even if this is not, should be taken with a grain of salt, because of course a function can do whatever you want in the middle of the two extreme of a given range. Okay, but the fact that ADCFT gives you such a small value of the shear viscosity at least seems to give support to the idea of using ADCFT to describe rigid physics.
What happened later is that people started to use other AdCFT duals that are for less supersymmetric systems, or to include chemical potentials, to do well, several other examples, and in all of them, the result was the same. Eta over S is equal to 1 over 4 pi. So this is one of the, this is related to my observation a couple of minutes before, that maybe there is some universality that tells you that in whatever gauge theory you are, at finite temperature, you will get a shear viscosity of that that value for the shear viscosity. As I will talk later about the introduction of quarks, these people computed very recently this value for the quenching approximations, so for introducing NF flavors with NF much less than NC, and they computed the first correction in NF over NC to the value to the 1 over 4 pi. Well, furthermore, a few years ago, these people made a conjecture that for all relativistic quantum field theories at finite temperature, there is a lower bound for the eta over s, and actually this bound is saturated for a gauge gravity dual. So whatever gauge theory you have that has a gravity dual should have an eta over s which is equal to 1 over 4 pi. So for the moment, well, so this is a conjecture, and for the moment all the examples worked out so far satisfy this conjecture. In the last few weeks, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, there were a couple of papers claiming that they violate this bound. By the way, I can come in the discussion part of the talk or later in the corridor to discuss about this. I mean, they are not really using the hypothesis of the conjecture. They consider non-relativistic systems, or in the conjecture, this of course you can always increase the value of the entropy of whatever system you have if you have enough number of species. It is a well-known problem, so basically these papers that appeared recently that violate this conjecture just use that fact. You can have, if you take the number of species to infinity, for example here the number of flavors to infinity, you can violate, you can make the entropy as large as you want and you can go to zero, eta over s going to zero. So let me come to the to the subject of my talk. So I will tell you, give you a flavor of the how this Q hat appears into the physics of a particle moving in a medium. The literature on that subject goes as far as to a paper by Landau and Pomeranchuk more than 50 years ago, where they studied a charged particle moving in a medium in classical electrodynamics. Migdal did the computation for quantum electrodynamics, and these people started the computation for QCD. Of course, this is a very hard computation. I mean, you have to imagine a very energetic particle moving at the close to the speed of light, interacting with a medium. You have big different sorts of interactions here. I mean, you have emitted gluons by the moving particle, and then you have this elastic interaction with the medium. Okay, if you want to give some result to this process, you have to make a lot of assumptions, of course. So these are a few of them, but the most important ones. What people assume is basically the so-called Aconal approximation, that is that this particle is so energetic that it basically moves in a straight line. So it moves in a straight line, and the transverse motion is a Brownian motion. All these collisions with the medium, they change the phase, the color phase. In order for any computation to be reliable here, you have to also to assume that the wavelength of the particle is much less than the distance between collision centers, and the distance between collision centers must be much smaller than the medium, the size medium. This is not a trivial assumption, because here remember that the medium is very small; it's one Fermi size. Okay, so these are the basic hypotheses. The dipole approximation is just an approximation to compute one of these scatterings here. So okay, if you take all these approximations, I cannot enter into details here because as you can imagine it's complicated. You can realize that from this formula. Biedemann and collaborators worked out this within the path integral approach. They worked out the cross-section of this process, of these kind of processes, and well, this is a very long formula for this kind of processes, in which the only thing I will mention is that here you have to introduce the density of scattering centers and the dipolar cross section coming from the dipolar perturbation. And then, in order to get something something shorter from this expression, you have to make further assumptions. There are two possible assumptions. The one that we will follow, which is the multiple soft scattering, which is you assume that the main channel to lose energy for this parton is just by soft emission of muons. If you do that, and this translates into this approximation, which is called the harmonic oscillator, because you replace this eta over sigma appearing here by an harmonic oscillator potential. You can, here is where this value Q hat appears for the first time. Q hat is the same Q hat I was mentioning before. Notice that here it depends on psi. Psi is the coordinate, the longitudinal coordinate in the direction of the motion of the particle, that you can identify this with the time, because basically this is a particle moving at the speed of light. So notice that Q hat is a dynamical quantity. The quantity that we are going to compute within IDCFT is a static quantity, so it should be interpreted as the average value of Q hat in the whole process. Then there is another approximation that I will not talk about, because I will not deal with this. I just wanted to let you know that there are more options than the one that we will follow. So this is the object in which we will focus, and I will consider this object independent of psi. So the kind of objects we will be dealing with is like the average of Q hat along the process.
What is R in that formula?
What is R? What R?
Yeah, just sort of what the R that appears there. Eta sigma of R is Q hat R squared.
These are, you mean?
Yes, right.
This is the position in the transverse plane.
Oh, okay, so it's the transverse position.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. If you plug this approximation into the formula, and doing a lot of more computations that were done by these two people, Kovner and Biedermann, they show that at the end of the day, what you get is that this Q hat appears. So here you are assuming that Q hat is independent of psi. You get that Q hat is related to a given Wilson loop in this very nice and short formula. This formula tells you that if you compute the Wilson loop across a rectangular contour, which is light-like, okay, where the light-like side is much longer than the spatial side, as it's displayed here, so you have to take the limit of L much smaller than L minus, and the leading term should be of this form, and you can read the Q hat value from the expression that you get when you compute this Wilson loop. So this comes from the previous formula after some massage.
So why is this the relevant approximation?
The one with the soft emission of gluons, do you mean?
Yeah, right.
Once you assume the soft emission of gluons, well, I think that for the energies that are involved into this problem, this is the most likely mechanism to lose energy.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to, I understood the previous formula, I just don't understand why this Wilson loop is some relevant approximation to the previous formula.
No, with the previous approximation, you get, believe me, we can go to this paper and you can see that you get, at the end of some computation, you get this formula here.
I see. So they proved this relationship to the Wilson loop.
Yes, they proved this relationship.
Any intuition you can provide for that relation?
Well, just as a first step on that, what's the orientation of this relative to the motion of the particle? Is it up this way or up this way?
No, the particle would move, the x minus direction would be the direction of the motion of the particle.
Okay.
No, I don't have any intuition for this formula.
So L is some sort of transverse distance that...
This L.
Well, that's what's... Yeah, the labeling is unclear, too. Which direction, which distance is L without that minus measure? The short distance? Yeah, the short distance.
The short distance. Special distance to transfer to motion.
So should we So should we think of L as kind of being the same as the R on the previous page, the transverse distance?
Well, it would be in the same transverse plane. Yes. Yes. I mean, it's not. You just take a Wilson loop with L is in the transverse direction. L minus is in the direction of motion. Let's say, and at the end of the day, you will take this limit, and you will get the leading term will be of this sort, and you will read the number from here.
Can you go back to the previous page for
yes.
a moment?
Yes. It's not simple at all to come from, as you see.
Okay, so eta. Okay, so there's some statement that the cross section appears in an exponential, and that you can read off Q hat in that exponential by as the coefficient of L minus times L squared, where L is some kind of relation, has some kind of relationship to R, I guess.
Yes, I think, well, as you say, looking at this and the appearance of the n over
mm-hmm.
sigma here, well, it looks natural that it appears in that way in the following. But the computation is easy.
So L minus is that going to be taken as a parameter then?
Yes, L minus is, let me see.
So go forward to the next
yes.
page again. So you have to know what L minus is in order to read off Q hat from this formula, right?
Yeah, L minus is a direction in the motion of the particle, so it's a scale on the psi direction in the previous transparency. So in the previous transparency, you got this coordinate psi, and you're integrating between psi,
mm-hmm.
psi 1 and infinity. So I assume that if you want, we can later take the paper of Comden and Biedermann.
Okay, well I sort of begin to...
It
understand,
comes from that,
you're
from
just
that
you're
integral.
Just parameterizing this Wilson loop by these two parameters, and then you're reading not you're claiming that Q hat is the coefficient of
exactly.
the multiplying these two things in the exponential.
That is, and the nice point is that in the previous expression, if you want, there is the Wilson loop is not apparent, and the fact. These people tried to write the expression in terms of a Wilson loop because once you did it, you can assume that this is, in principle, a non-perturbative formula. It's a gauge invariant non-perturbative formula. So this is their idea. They, in that multi-gluon emission process, you are assuming perturbative. You are assuming that these emissions of gluons are soft gluons. So you are assuming a perturbative computation. However, at the end of the day, you get a formula that is in principle valid for also non-perturbative, for the non-perturbative regime. So the claim would be that this is a formula, this is the definition, so this you get for the perturbative regime. And the claim is that this is the definition of Q hat in the non-perturbative regime. So the point would be, if in the gauge theory I am able to compute this Wilson loop,
mm-hmm.
I can read the value of Q hat. Of course, in gauge theory, to compute Wilson loops is a very hard problem.
I'm just trying to understand the definition. So, somehow this Wilson loop is directly probing this Q hat, and that was what I was trying to understand. That it really is the shear viscosity that enters.
The shear viscosity is anywhere here. We are talking about the jet quenching. Here I'm talking about the jet quenching. So this medium also displays the shear viscosity, the small shear viscosity.
Yeah, I'm confusing, but anyway. Okay.
So let's postpone that for the.
Yeah, so the jet. I'm still confused as to why this Wilson loop should probe directly this jet quenching parameter.
This comes from the previous assumptions and working out a little bit that formula.
Mm-hmm.
It's derived
from the previous formula.
Yeah, yeah. It's derived from the previous formula, and actually, it's not my job, but the job of these
right,
people
I understand.
Some years ago. So let me go a little bit further because I will not be able to get to the end of the talk, and then we can postpone this. I will be here up to Friday, so we have time to discuss about this if you want. So well, in, I mean, luckily or fortunately, in ADCFT, we know how to compute the Wilson loop in the fundamental, and we have this relation between the Wilson loop in the adjoint and the fundamental, which in the large and limit they coincide. So this was this is the kind of object we can compute in ADCFT. For example, the famous original computation of Maldacena and Ray and G of the quark anti-quark potential, which is a computation of the Wilson loop in the fundamental for a rectangular loop, which is different to the one we are dealing with now. So one can just compute Q hat, just take a light Wilson loop as the one I showed two transparencies before, compute it, and read Q hat. So this is what these people did less than a year ago, Lura, Jacobal, and Biedemann, and they got this value. So this value, there are several interesting things. Well, first, the dependence on the, it only depends on the top coupling and on the temperature, and it depends in a way that is not, these people was expecting the dependence to be like a proportion to the entropy density or to the entropy density. However, these powers are not the ones that appear in the entropy density or the energy density. So it seems that Q hat is measuring just the temperature for a given top coupling. Now, if you plug in the numbers, I mean, of course this is valid for large lambda, actually in the limit of lambda going to infinity, n equals 4, but one cannot prevent working with numbers. So if you put three colors, if you put alpha strong equal 1/2, which is roughly the value that should have alpha strong for these temperatures, this comes from the randomization group, and you put the temperature of 300 MeV, this, as I told you, Q hat is a dynamic quantity, so you have to take like an average value, so we take this temperature as a representative of all the temperatures of the process, you get a Q hat which is 4.5, sorry, which is much better than the perturbative computation. So something like the shear viscosity computation is happening here. The computation based in ADCFT is giving you a result that is much closer to the value measured in the experiment. Notice that, however, to compute this, we have taken alpha strong equal 0.5, the number of colors equal 3. If you put this into the TOF coupling, this gives you a TOF coupling of 6 pi, which is almost 20. So you would expect 1 over lambda corrections. So it wouldn't be necessary to compute these corrections to see if this result, when you compute the corrections go in the right direction or not for finite top coupling. So this, what we did in the first paper I mentioned at the beginning, I will have really few times, so I will go very fast, and I will try to only tell you the results, is to try to study this Lura, Jacobal, and Biedemann computation in a more general setup, to try to be able to deal with different cases that were of physical interest. So we started from an answer, a very general answer for the 10-dimensional space-time metric that included this term in particular, includes this index M, goes not only ranges for the external coordinate, but also can be the time, for example. This index ranges all the space-time indices. So this can, for example, be a rotating black hole or a charged black hole. So okay, for this background, what we do is we compute the Nambu-Goto action of a string whose end follows this particular Wilson loop. So the computation is very simple and very canonical, but I have no time to give you the details, but it's very simple. I just parameterize the world volume following that Wilson loop. And if you take this, the approximation L minus much greater than L, at the end of the day, you get this formula for Q hat. So this is a formula for P is the number of dimensions of the brain we are dealing with. So P equals 3 will be the Lura, Jacobal, and Biedemann computation. While P equals 3 and the particular values of these functions that correspond to the black tree brain. And this is the formula we got. If you assume that the background is non-rotating, you can use the relation between the horizon radius and the temperature to give this expression here that looks more messy, but notice that everything here is numerics, except this, all the important dependencies in the scales of the theory are here. The dependence on the temperature and on the top coupling. So for P equals 3, we recover the Liouville, Gopal, and Biedermann result, and for P different from 3, you get, in particular, you see that this is not proportional neither to the entropy density nor to the energy density in different dimensions than P equals 3. So with this formula, now we deal with different cases. So first, we analyze the Witten's background that I was mentioning before. Okay, I have not much time, so I will go fast in this point. I mean, this is a background with the default brains wrapped in a circle. So you can introduce this into our previous formula, and the upshot of everything is that, okay, you have to, well, the upshot of is that if you put back the number of colors, strong coupling, etc., you will get a Q hat, which is a little bit smaller than the previous one, but still good.
So how did you choose your radius of compactification again?
Okay, in this case, just to have a, I mean, we don't know what's the relation between the thermal circle and the fifth dimensional circle, so we take just as a representative C equals 1, which is the point of the phase transition of this model.
I see. So just set by the temperature scale, in other words.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be, I think I said before, but I want to repeat that these values I shouldn't be really trusted too much, but they give you a flavor of the order of magnitude of the values coming out of these computations.
Mm-hmm.
Because notice that in particular, for example, here there are no quarks, so there are a lot of things that make this theory very different from BCD. An important point that I can already mention is that notice that this number is not the same as the previous one, so this is not a universal result. For the eta over s quantity, the result for whatever moment you take is always 1 over 4 pi, except here it's not the case. However, you always get a number which is around 4, 3, 5 dB squared over 4. So the other case, which was we did this a couple of months after the paper of Liouville, Biedermann, so we were really interested in the 1 over lambda corrections. Luckily, these people computed several years ago the corrected backgrounds. So you have two sources of corrections. One of the sources of corrections is the alpha prime corrections to the background. These are the ones that these people computed, and this is are given by these functions T, X, and R. And there is another source that is actually dominate that comes from the fact that when you compute the Nambu-Goto action, you have also to compute fluctuations around saddle point, and these are extremely hard to compute, even from the times when people was computing the quark and the quark potential. These are, I think that even for the quark and the quark potential, there are several papers dealing with these corrections, but there is no agreement between the results that they get. So the correction that we computed, that is the one coming from alpha prime, is subleading. I want to tell you that, but it's decreasing. So the fact that this decreasing seems to suggest that the interpolation is again smooth, but of course we are neglecting leaving a dominant term that unfortunately we cannot deal with. This is related to the fact that just after the paper of Liouville, Gopal, and Biedermann, there was a lot of interest in exploring different cases to see if the result was universal, if it was increasing or decreasing different new ingredients added into the game. So the final case that we consider is the generic black hole with three U1 charges that is known in if you take the D3 brain and you consider the black 3 brain, you can include up to three U1 charges. So we consider the most general black hole coming out of a black 3 brain. Okay, let me avoid all the details. This has to do with the introduction of chemical potentials in the gauge theory, but this is not the baryon chemical potential. It's a baryon chemical potential for U1s that this theory has. And at the end of the day, okay, we got, I will avoid everything because I have no time and I will go to the other point. okay, we got several graphs telling you how you had, basically, you had increases with the addition of this chemical potential. So, according to the number, you can have up to 3 chemical potentials, so you have all these graphs telling you how it increases. But this is not very important. Okay, let me come to the final point, which is that clearly a very important problem in this game is to introduce quarks into the picture. And this is a very difficult problem because in order to do it, even in the original Maldacena case, I mean, you have to, people know that in order to put quarks, you have to put these 7 brains into the picture. If you want to put as many quarks as colors, you have to put as many of these 7 brains as D3. So you have to study the full back reactive geometry of the D3 and the D7s, and this is a hard problem that nobody has solved so far. Furthermore, in order to study the plasma, you will have to put finite temperature to that difficult problem. So it is hard, there is people trying to go in that direction, but it is a hard direction. So, but it is an important one.
But is it clear that you need to do that? Because in C, I was doing the fixed NF, and the quarks are non-real. So do you need that for the physics?
Yeah, well, I mean, besides the Toft limit, there is another way of taking the limit of these series, which is the Venezia limit, which is taking.
Yeah, I know.
So this is a.
Physically, do you think you need that?
I think so. There are clearly processes that if you expand, that comes with an NF over NC in front of them, that would be neglected by the Toft approximation, and clearly, but they should be there in QCD. So in that sense, I think that this is necessary. We can discuss later too. I want to hear your arguments because you don't seem to be convinced about this. Okay, so what we did, I am already out of time. So I don't know what to do. Let me try to, in 3 minutes, finish and tell you a couple of things, and then I can leave for the discussions and for the following days to explain you what we did in the second paper. So there are some conjectures coming by these people a couple of months ago telling you how, I mean, they argue that the Q hat in QCD should be smaller than the that in N equals 4. They start from a formula that is exact in superconformal field theories, and then they go, they conjecture, I mean, from this formula, which is an equal sign, they go to this formula, which is purely conjectural. But they already claim that in order to be sure that this formula is correct, you have to see if the argument going from here to here still is valid when you have fundamental degrees of freedom. So clearly it is of utmost importance to add these fundamental degrees of freedom and to clarify if they are important or not. So okay, unluckily, well, the cases in which we can do that are cases that have some weaknesses. So one of these is a non-critical holography. These are non-critical string theories, so string theories in less than 10 dimensions, that one of the weaknesses is that if you write the gravity approximation of these theories, the alpha prime corrections are the same order of the leading term. So if you only deal with the leading term of the series of alpha prime corrections, you are really neglecting corrections that are the same size of the term that you're dealing with. However, there are some papers on this subject, and these people found that even if, in principle, everything could be wrong from the very beginning because of this argument, there are several things of the gauge theory that seems to be captured by the leading term. So it might happen that there is some robustness in these theories that prevent all the alpha prime corrections to destroy at least some results of the leading. So with this philosophy in mind, we try to analyze 2 cases, which are a dual of QCD in the conformal window and a dual of super QCD in the cyber conformal window, and to compute Q hat and all the transport properties and thermodynamical quantities that people use to compute in ED-CFT for different backgrounds, and to try to see what's their dependence with NF. Well, I have the minus 4 minutes by now. Let me only mention the case of QCD in the conformal window. So this is a five-dimensional background. This is a solution. The solution is basically a black hole in ADS, the same as in the Malacena case, except for the fact that the radius of ADS and the dilaton depends on rho, and rho depends on NF over NZ. There is a, it really depends on QF over QC, where QF and QC are proportional to NF over NC, but the constant of proportionality is in principle unknown if one doesn't solve completely this non-critical string theory. One can extrapolate 10-dimensional results and give a number here, but it is not certain. Nevertheless, I think it is interesting to see, I mean, even if you don't know what is the parameter coming in here, I mean, here you can see how the corrections in NF or NC go in the solution. So, well, there are some things that you can recognize. For example, this is the coupling, the QCD coupling. This has to be interpreted as the QCD coupling, and you can see that this behaves quite well. For example, its limit for large rho is the one that Veneziano conjectured in his original paper, and it decreases along the conformal window, which is also something expected from the gauge theory picture. So let me go very fast. You can compute several quantities, and in particular you can compute Q hat. Okay, if you compute Q hat depends on the number of, is a function that is not written here, and has these two limiting values for rho going to zero, so the zero flavors or infinite flavors. These two limits are like very extreme limits, because this is valid for the conformal window, which is a given range of rho, which is does not include neither zero nor infinity. These are like outside the range. But what you can see here is that, I can explain this in the coffee later, that this behavior seems to violate this conjecture of Euler, Gopal, and Biedel. Of course, alpha prime corrections might do the job to solve this discrepancy, but in principle, this seems to be the first observation that the addition of flavors takes you out of the arguments for this, the arguments that I couldn't explain because of lack of time. Well, I will avoid this, the other case of wrapped pi brains, so I will leave this for the coffee, and I will only summarize. I didn't, so if anybody's interested, I can comment later about any of these things. So what we did in our papers is to compute the jet quenching parameter in several cases. In particular, we computed finite top coupling corrections. We computed the thermal deformation of Witten's default background. And we studied, well, the addition of chemical potentials for a gauged R symmetry. Well, also in this paper, we did something that I didn't include in the talk, which is this computation is made for an infinite value of the quark mass of the moving parton. We computed 1 over m corrections to a result. And then in the second paper, what we did is to study the introduction of unquenched fundamental degrees of freedom in non-critical setups and in wrapped fibrin setups. These wrapped fibrin setups are very closely related to super QCD-like theories, at least in the infrared. Well, but the final point I would like to mention is that the simplest, in principle, case, and the case that one should deal with, which is n equals 4 super Young theory, coupled to n equals 2 flavors, at finite temperature, is still unsolved. This is the end. Thank you.
I always lose track of this string of arguments, I'm afraid. So the claim is, of course, from this Malvicena conjecture and what have you, the duality between the two types of theories. And then there's the statement that QCD looks something like the conformal theory, right? But that something like is not very precise, or am I wrong about that?
Now, well, QCD doesn't look at all like n equals 4. So what you said, if you turn on the temperature,
yes,
the two theories above the confinement transition point of QCD
mm-hmm.
seem they seem to look alike.
So is that, how quantitative is that statement though? I mean, we've heard other talks that you adjust the the warp factor and this and that, and you might or might not get linear regi trajectories and so forth and so on, and so it's not a very precise statement, is that right?
The statement, the Malassena conjecture is a conjecture.
Well, I understand.
And it's a very precise statement.
Yeah.
Its relation to the relation between the computations in the Malassena setup with QCD is a much loose statement.
Right, right.
Because
that's precisely what I...
Well, because this is... But this is loose also from the gauge theory point of view, if you want. You can forget about the Malassena conjecture and you have whatever other tool you imagine to deal with n equals 4 at finite temperature. So if you have this tool, you want to compute things, and then you see, well, but the things that I have computed have some relation, or have not relation with QCD. So this is a question that is completely unrelated to Malassena correspondence, I would say.
When you carry out, say one of your latter calculations, and then you're going to make a statement about what a quark gluon plasma does in QCD, that can never be made really precise, right? I mean, it's kind of at a conjecture level that there could be some relationship. Is that where am I?
Well, the fact that it isn't a conjectural level is unavoidable, and it, probably, I don't know if it will be forever like this, but at least for a long time.
What I'm getting at is, I guess one should take this or that configuration of brains or whatever, and the changes that emerge as a result of making this conjecture is some sort of error bar on the possibilities for QCD. Is that the way to think about it?
I would say that this is more or less. Let me say something, that for different brain configurations, you get different gauge theories. It's not that you can put whatever configuration you want, and this should be related to QCD. If you decide to put different kind of degrains at different geometries, you have to compute the supersymmetries, you have to compute the for example, the Kaluza-Klein mode. So the you can read the gauge theory that comes from that configuration, and it is different if you put different kinds of degrains. So, and QCD is a very particular, would be a very, very particular setup.
Mm-hmm.
You have only three colors, and you have only... you are considering massless quarks, you have three flavors, let's say.
Okay,
yeah.
So there are a variety of brain configurations, I guess, that map correctly in that sense.
What you can do, let me come back
mm-hmm.
a second to your point. But you can, I think that the philosophy should be maybe that if I compute something for n equals 4, and I compute the same thing for n equals 2 and different kind of theories, and I can see how this result depends on decreasing the degree of supersymmetry, on introducing flavors, on different parameters, I can estimate, let's say, the value in QCD. But of course, I think that the only way to have really to compute in string theory the value of the properties of the quark-gluon plasma in QCD would be to have the string dual of QCD that we don't have, and there are reasons to think that we will never have.
Why is the latter statement true? What reasons make you
think
you'll never get it?
I mean, we will never have it unless we are able to solve string theory in highly curved backgrounds. I mean, the dual
mm-hmm.
to QCD would be a string theory in a very highly curved background. So
yeah,
for the moment, we are basically restricted to consider supergravity, the supergravity approximation of string theory,
mm-hmm.
except in very few cases in which you take some quantum numbers very large and you can do some sort of Toft reasoning. But to deal with QCD at strong coupling, you will have to deal with the full string theory in a curved background, which is something that, okay, maybe we have an answer for that.
So your calculations so far have not been in a warped background, or have they?
No, it is in a warped background, yes. But it is always in the supergravity approximation.
Yeah,
so you're taking the curvature is large enough. Small enough.
Small enough.
Small enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the confusion. I think last week was Stanley Brodsky came, was here, yes?
Right, right.
So
yeah.
Probably he was talking about, it was mentioned in my transparencies that he is works in a different approach, which is this ADS-QCD approach,
mm-hmm.
which is a sort of phenomenological application of ADS-CFT.
Right.
And actually, the last part of my talk was more or less similar in spirit, because these non-critical models are really very, have a lot of weaknesses, as ADS-QCD has
mm-hmm.
in principle. I mean, it is not based in any fundamental theories, it's just based in some concepts of ADS-CFT and try to apply them from a bottom-up approach.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the philosophy of the last part of my talk, I mean, to try to see, well, if we do the same thing, we try to construct a model that has some features as the ones that QCD have, well, what's the dependence emerging from the, if we include a large number of flavors?